Good evening. Let's call to order the Special Planning Commission meeting, study session of July 28, 2026, 6 p.m. The city doesn't tolerate disruptive behavior in our meetings. This Planning Commission meeting is considered a limited public forum, which means the commission can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech. Speaker comments must be limited to the agenda item being considered by the commission. If a speaker's comments are not related to an agenda item, the presiding officer will rule the speaker out of order. A speaker will not be ruled out of order because of a disagreement with the content of their speech. Location and online meeting details are available on the Planning Commission agenda. Use the Show Caption button to view captions on Zoom. Following the study session, the regular Planning Commission meeting will begin at 7 p.m. We encourage the public to stay tuned and participate in the regular meeting. Recording officer, may we please have the roll call?
Commissioner Segura?
Present.
Commissioner Davis?
Present.
Commissioner Fagoni?
Present.
Vice Chair Shukla?
Present.
Commissioner Pine?
Present.
Chair Iglesias?
Present.
Commissioner Cerrone?
Present.
We have seven commissioners present.
Thank you. Moving to our next item, 25-0808. The title is Special Development Permit, Demolition of Existing Industrial Building and the Construction of 172 seven-story apartment units. Is there a staff report?
Yes. Good evening, Planning Commissioners. My name is Margaret Netto, Senior Planner. This is a study session to review 100% affordable housing project at 1171 Sonora Court. I want to correct the agenda. The project size is actually 1.3 acres in size and not 3.54. Next slide, please. The project proposes to redevelop a 1.3 acre industrial property within the Lawrence Station area plan. Demolish an existing 19,512 square foot one-story industrial building and construct 172 apartment units, and that's 170 affordable units and two managers units. The project consists of one seven-story building, including two levels of above-ground podium parking structure. Next slide. The project is located between Lawrence Station and Kiefer Road, north of Lawrence Caltrans Station and west of Lawrence Expressway. Surrounding land uses include residential, office, and industrial uses. Next. The project site is designated in the general plan as transit mixed use and zoned flexible mixed use. The project would have a residential density of 132 dwelling units per acre, which is achieved through participation in the LSAP Development Incentives Program and the California State Density Bonus Law. Next. This is the site plan. Driveway access is from Sonora Court. A total of two heritage trees would be removed for construction purposes. Walkways would be installed around the perimeter of the building. As noted, the site would be redeveloped into a seven-story building that would contain units on floors 2 through 7. A two-level concrete parking structure would provide 88 parking stalls on floors 1 and 2. The residential units would include 27 studios, 57 one-bedroom, 43 two-bedroom, and 43 three-bedroom apartments. Next slide. This is a streetscape image from the view from the southwest. The maximum height of the building is 86 feet and is within the height restrictions of 100 feet. Staff has worked with the applicant to provide a variation and material to break up the elevations and add visual interest. The elevations provide a distinct bottom, top, and middle. Next slide. This is the view from the southeast. You can see the varied roof line and articulation of the corner and the corner tower. Next. Of the 172 residential units, 136 would be dedicated for low-income tenants. and 34 units would be dedicated for modern income units, households. The applicant is entitled to 5 concessions, incentives, and any number of waivers or reductions of development standards that would physically prevent the project from being built at the permitted density. The applicant is requesting 4 concessions and 2 waivers. Next slide. The concessions. Staff worked with the applicant to reduce the number of requested concessions and waivers. The applicant will go into more detail on how they meet the intent of the requirement. But concession 1 of the ground floor plate height. The citywide objective design standards requires a minimum ground floor plate height of 14 feet. The project proposes 12. However, a canopy has been added which wraps around the front of the building and side elevation, giving the impression of a floor plate set at 14 feet. Concession number 2, the roof form. The citywide design objectives mandate variations in cornice detail and height for buildings longer than 100 feet. The project does not provide variations every 75 feet. However, variations are incorporated by using roof angles in strategic locations. Concession number 3, the roof form, the cornice detail. Citywide objectives design standards require the cornice details to be a minimum of 18 inches tall and 12 inches deep. The project proposes cornices below the roof line at various locations to create the visual impression of a building setback at the 6th and 7th story. Next slide. And concession number 4, the individual storage locker. The code requires the project to provide 200 cubic feet of individual storage space per unit, per studio and one bedroom apartments, and 300 cubic storage feet for every other residential unit. The project proposes 4,800 cubic feet of individual lockable storage on the second floor, which will provide 24 individual storage spaces. Next slide, please. And here are the waivers. Waiver number 1 is the street setback. The citywide objective design standards specify a height setback for floor 3 and above with a minimum of 5 feet from a public street-facing wall. The project proposes no additional setback above the third floor. Waiver number 2. The citywide design objectives mandate a vertical division of building elevations by major recesses at a maximum of 75-foot intervals at 10 feet wide and 5 feet deep from ground level to roof level. The project proposes vertical building divisions with elevations ranging from approximately 5 to 9 feet. Next slide. A virtual community outreach meeting was held on June 10th. There were about 6 participants, but there were no comments or concerns. Next slide. Staff was requesting feedback on project design and site planning, design details, concession, and waivers requested. That concludes my presentation, and the applicant is here to make a presentation. And they will focus more on the architectural design and then the waivers and concessions. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there an applicant report? Please.
You know, if you can hear me. Oh, there we go. My name is Claire Costeres. I am an associate project manager with Midpen Housing on 1171 Sonora Court. Thank you to the commissioners, to the city staff, and to Margaret for reviewing our plans. We really appreciate the time you've put into this. And today, yes, we're talking about 1171 Sonora Court. This is an 100% affordable housing development with a mix of studios, ones, twos, and 3 bedrooms. With average median incomes ranging from about 30% to up to 70% AMI. We have been working closely with city housing staff on this project since about 2020. Right now, the city is the owner of the land and will be ground leasing it back to MidPen to develop the affordable community. We're really excited that this is adjacent to the Lawrence Caltrain station and is a part of the Lawrence Station area plan. It's very exciting to get to bring a lot of new residents this great amenity of Caltrain. And MidPen currently has about 11 communities that are owned and operated in Sunnyvale. One currently coming online soon is 1178 Sonora Court, which is across from 1171, also known as Ira D. Hall Square. Currently, that's slated to complete construction in the fall and lease up shortly thereafter. With me today, I have Hawaii Lei with Studio T Squared Architects. He will be presenting on the design of this project, and also Kevin Griffith from MidPen Housing, who's our Vice President of Housing Development, and he can answer any questions that you may have. With that, I'll hand it over to Hawaii to present our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, good evening, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to present today. My name is Hawaii with Studio T-Square. We're a planning and architecture firm based in Oakland, and multifamily housing, especially affordable housing, is one of our core areas of practice. And as Claire mentioned today, we are, you know, really thankful for the opportunity today to present to you and get some constructive feedback on the work we've done so far with city staff and within our team. And so look forward to hearing your comments for today. Can we go to the next slide, please? So in front of you is a site plan that Margaret showed earlier of the area. We did highlight a couple of additional projects that we have worked on with the city and city staff. Starting with the site south of the Lawrence Caltrain station is the Astor Avenue master plan. We were the designers for the master plan and also the architect of record for the apartment building, Heartwood, that just recently completed, I think, earlier this year. And that was about 400 units of housing south of the station. And immediately to the north of the station, as Claire mentioned earlier, is the 1178 Sonora Court project, which is 176 units of affordable housing project units that we're working with MidPen. And then now we're turning our eyes on to the 1171 site. The reason I want to show this slide here is, one, to illustrate our experience working with the city for this area, and two is that we're trying to also keep an eye, you know, as we fill in these different sites as pieces of a puzzle, we try to keep an eye on holistically how we develop the area plan as a partner to the city to help implement the vision we have for the Lawrence Station area plan. Next slide, please. So this is the site plan that we saw earlier, and I think for us, when we approached the site, the really three main design consideration we kept in mind were A, keeping the street trees as much as we can, B, focusing on the pedestrian experience, and how do we enhance that as we create this network of pedestrian walkways through a corridor that previously did not have pedestrian circulation access. And then three, as we look into introducing these much bigger scaled buildings that are currently in a neighborhood of single-story, industrial buildings, how do we design the architecture so that it is visible from all four sides with visual interest from all four sides? And so that's kind of the kind of main driving considerations we had as we approached the design. And then the future slides coming up, we'll be talking a little bit more about the details of each consideration. Next, please. And before we get into the exterior design, I think we also want to highlight the courtyard, which has a lot of the amenities for the residents of this project. As we mentioned earlier, there's a really huge cross-section of different unit types, so we expect to have a lot of different populations that will be occupying this building. And so the way we designed the courtyard with different areas that can accommodate different programming, and the way it connects with the community building and study spaces that are to the left in this case, plan west of the open space, was a way to allow that flexibility to occur, you know, as far as programming. How do you want to, whether it's, you know, community gardening, you know, learning centers that end up doing having a daycare out in the courtyard, it creates a lot of flexibility for MidPen and how they want to program the site with their service providers. Next, please. And so this is a slide looking at the site from the southwest. So standing across the street, looking towards the building from the southwest. And so you could see there's just really the defining feature is the existing trees. And so we wanted to capture that before we jump to the next slide. So next, please. So again, this is a slide. The vantage point is not exactly the same. Apologize. You know, this is more of an idealized vantage point as if you're standing inside the building that's across the street, whereas when we could take a picture, we had to respect property, you know, privacy of someone else's property. But as you can see, really the focus is on looking at how the trees in the building are complementing each other, as far as looking at the corners being the visual anchors. You know, with the driveways on each side of the site, the corners will be the main focal points. So we looked at materiality that's, you know, oriented in a vertical manner to kind of accentuate the fact that, you know, these are very tall trees that we have, so we want to look at the vertical dimension of the materials. And as we branch out from the corners, we started to explore how we can implement the idea of the base, middle, top design approach in different ways. And so, as you can see on the left, you know, we use a way of using frames that are in the dark brown color to contrast with the light light gray off-white building, you know, base of the building. And then likewise, as we turn the corner on to the other side along Sonora Court, as the next slide will show you, there's a different ways that we're handling the frames. And then one of the, thank you. And then one of the other features we want to point out is, as I mentioned earlier, how do we enhance the pedestrian experience, right? And so for us, it's really making sure that we have active programming along the street frontage, so lobbies, community rooms, bike storage, spaces that are programmed to have people occupying them regularly are placed right next to the street so that pedestrians walking through it feel, you know, have a sense of safety while they're going through the site. Next slide, please. And so this is a slide looking at the site across the street from the southeast. Again, there's limitations on how far I can get away from the site. It is an active construction site I was standing at. So, but again, you can see the defining features are trees and the existing driveway that's situated between these two trees we try to keep. So as a way to maintain as many trees as we can. Next, please. And so again, vantage point's a little bit different. We're here, we set the camera a little bit farther back. But again, the idea is that, you know, the corner will be very visible because of the way we place driveways. And in this case, the corner we accentuate by bringing it down, right? On the other side, we raised the parapet height so that it was a little bit more prominent. Here, we played it down a bit, stepped down the building here. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, we looked at how we can use frames to create this base middle top expression. And so in this case, we use the same frame idea, but we introduce some angles. If you look closely, you could see that between each frame, the lines are not going vertically. They're actually slanted at an angle. And again, this slide also illustrates a point that I made earlier about how we wanted to activate the ground floor space for the pedestrian experience. Next, please. Now, this is a slide looking at the site from the northeast. This is standing in the parking lot between the two different adjacent neighbors. So it provides a little bit different vantage point as if you were on Sonora Court. Next, please. And so here, I think what we're trying to illustrate here is the idea that we're treating the building as a four-sided architecture while not really putting in too many new elements. So the corner tower here is using the same materials that we had previously shown on the southwest corner of Sonora Court. And then again, using the same approach with frames, mixing it with how we group windows together to again, look at how we can achieve the whole base, middle, top expression in different ways. Next, please. And this is last slide, looking at the site from the northwest corner. This is the, I think, the Kiefer, the Savoy residential development. Incidentally, we were the design architects for this project, but we were not the architects of record. Next, please. And so I think this slide is the last slide to capture a little bit of the, again, how we were handling the base middle top expression in different ways, looking at how you can use sunscreens to accentuate the top of the building, and just mix materials. It doesn't quite capture the slide, our intent perfectly, but the existing project on the left of this of the slide actually has a very similar color scheme as that white element immediately next to it. So that was a way of us looking at tying it in with the existing context. Incidentally, the hedges we've shown are much lower. I think they may have grown quite a bit since then. So the view is a little bit different compared to real life. So in real life, a lot of the base of the building will be obscured by the hedges that's along the property line. Next, please. These are imagery from other projects that we worked with Jet Landscape Architecture, the landscape architect for this project. And these are some of the design strategies they have in place for different projects at the podium courtyard. And just really wanted to show kind of sense of touch and feel of what the space could look like in the courtyard. Next, please.
Apologies for the interruption. Vice Chair, the applicant's time has expired.
Oh, so your time has expired.
Oh, okay.
Do you have anything you want to finish? Is it the
slide? I think this might be the last slide, but if you don't mind jumping in the next one, please.
Okay, just, we will,
yeah.
For the response time, maybe we'll adjust your time.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, just wanted to highlight materials. I think, you know, in terms of the cladding we have, it'll be a mix of fiber cement cladding, using paint to create a variety of expression, and then stucco to, create, again, using different colors to create the palette. The benefit, obviously, there's a cost benefit to it, but also the time, the fire resistance for both materials are, something we use in California. They are fire resistant. In many cases, we use them on a lot of our projects. And the one detail I wanted to highlight are the two window details on the bottom right of the slide. One of the design comments we received were to focus on using recessed windows where we can. And so that was a way of showing how we have two different options on how we can approach that design requirement. One is to actually create a different, a narrower frame, the wood framing, creating a narrow wood frame inset to set the window and then flashing it out so it looks like a recessed window. And then the other option is actually using a product by VPI Windows that are integrally designed so that you install the window and it looks like it's recessed 3 inches. And so that's just a way to show, you know, what options we have at this point to create that effect. So thank you. All right.
Thank you
very much.
So we have, I'll now ask for questions from my colleagues and my Commissioner Cerrone.
Thank you, Vice Chair. So I had some questions I wanted to ask about the parking. I'll start with staff, and we may want to go to the applicant as well. But so there's 0.5 parking spaces per unit. And so are these assigned parking spaces, or how does it work? Is it, and some of these are two-bedroom, three-bedroom units. Are they assigned, or is it just first come, first serve?
I would ask the applicant,
okay.
Because I believe they are, I don't think they are assigned, but I would like to double check.
Good evening, Kevin Griffith from MidPen here. And yes, parking spaces are assigned by our management company, and we keep track of who is utilizing them.
They're assigned on what basis? Because some are three-bedroom units, some are two-bedroom units. Is it still, how are they assigned?
Yeah, that's
you assign a half a space. So.
Yeah. Generally, during the lease-up process, we will assess, you know, who is interested in a parking space, and then we'll run a kind of a fair process to assign them among the units.
Are you saying the parking is unbundled?
Well, in the sense that you are not guaranteed a parking space as a resident because we have less than one space per unit.
Right. Okay, I guess I'm not clear on how the decision is made, who gets a space and who doesn't.
Yeah, essentially a lottery type process among interested residents who express an interest when they decide to that they would like to live here and are accepted for residency.
So by my count, it's 170 total units, 200, not counting the studio units, 272 bedrooms and 85 parking spaces. And there are a lot of statistics, but there's an MTC study that they expect the percentage of zero vehicle households in Sunnyvale Mountain View to be 6.8% by 2030. Or 1.69 cars per household. So I'm wondering, does the city or the applicant have an analysis that says this is enough parking for these residents?
This project actually qualifies for the state density bonus for parking, so they are fine for parking under the parking requirement.
Right, I understand the state law lets them propose zero parking, but you know, we've seen a number of these developments since this law went into effect, and at least initially the developer would do a study that showed how many, which is a common study, right, before this law, that how many units are, how much parking is required, and you know, sometimes they would come in a little on the low side, or there were questions about visitors or whatever, but so they would propose parking that was not that different from what the required parking would have been. But this is an example, and maybe we've seen some others, that where it seems like this is way too low, or if we have some information that says it's not too low, I'd be very interested in that. It seems like so then there's a select customer base for these housing units. They selectively would need to be people who don't own cars, which is atypical of the population in general. And if this was a regular market rate development, you could say, well, that's okay, so you shouldn't be living here if you own a car. But this is affordable housing and subsidized, and so it seems like we're saying a large subset of the population who don't have a job on a transit stop or something because they get on the train, you know, they have to get off somewhere, that you are just not eligible for this affordable housing. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's certainly something that we can work with the developer to provide information on for the staff report. We would likely look at the project across the street, which MidPen also proposed and got approved with. So we'll look at the parking rate there too. But as Margaret mentioned, the project does comply with the state density bonus law parking.
Yeah, it seems like the parking is just way too low. And then if there are signs, so how about visitors? There's no parking for visitors, right?
Correct.
Wow.
And the state density bonus law doesn't require guest parking either, which has been an issue for the city as well, but we recognize that.
Yeah, no, I understand. I guess there are multiple answers here. One is that state law is sort of once again requiring us to do something that makes no sense in the real world, or maybe there's a staff or the applicant has some understanding that isn't obvious to me anyway, that where this isn't a parking. So and maybe there's ways to get around that. Like there's a lot of commercial sites still on that street, which probably have empty parking lots at night. Maybe there could be some kind of sharing. I'm just, you know, but as it is now, it just seems sort of unworkable. Okay, well, my other question has to do with income limits and how that works, kind of a general question, but I noticed the one across the street has the, you know, the income, it's, which surprised me, it's broken into 30%, 40%, 50%, 60%, 70%. I'm not sure I've seen that before. This is different. This is low and moderate. So one question is, why are they handled differently?
Yeah, I can address that if you don't mind. Yeah, we are just a little bit, we're further in the process in that project that's under construction and coming to market very soon. In this project, we haven't made those distinctions, but we fully expect that we will have that kind of banding as you see across the street, you know, based on the requirements of the funding programs that we utilize down the road. So right now we've got a wide range and we'll be more specific as we go.
Well, so my question is, I mean, your salary is not a lifetime condition and salaries change. So who monitors the, let's say you've got a two-person household, who monitors the income of the people living there and enforces that? Maybe there's an end-of-year bonus or something that pushes them over the, particularly with these narrow ranges, and do they then have to move out immediately, or is there like a two-year average, or how does that work?
Yeah, right. We will obviously, upon initial lease up, be monitoring, be tracking income, and then we recertify the tenants every year as we go. And with a wide band of incomes, people actually can sort of graduate up in those bands and still maintain compliance with the requirements of our programs.
But they have to move to another unit, or?
No, we have, it's the way the programs are enacted, you don't make somebody actually leave their apartment and move to a different one in that eventuality. The next one that becomes available then becomes rented at that lower income if somebody's income increases.
So you're saying, let's say they're in the 40% AMI bracket, they get a raise, so now they're in the 50% AMI. But then they would move to another apartment when it becomes available?
No, I'm sorry. That family would not have to move, but the next family that moves in would be, that apartment would be rented at the 40% rent in this example.
So they don't have to move out?
They don't have to move out, exactly.
No. So no matter how high their salary goes, they can stay there once they get into it?
Yeah, technically we will not evict for a raise in income, but we will encourage people to move on as their income outgrows the programs.
Okay, well, that's good to know. That seems like a better arrangement. Okay, I just have one more quick question. The current 1170 Sonora Court building, it looks like one of the Piri Arriaga buildings. It's have a lot of ornate tile and things inside, and the existing building.
Address this one.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
The building, the 1171 building that's there, it looks from the outside like it's one of the Piri Arriaga buildings. Have you been inside that
building? I'm actually not aware of the provenance of that building. I'm sorry, I don't know if you know more about
it. I've
the
never been inside
building.
The building. Oh. I've only walked on the exterior.
Okay, well, there's a number of these buildings all over the Bay Area and Sunnyvale, and they have kind of a unique architecture. I was going to ask if there's any historical significance. Obviously, there are a number of them, but if we got rid of all of them, it seemed like we would have lost something. But that was my only question.
Yes, we did do a historical analysis, and it is not considered historic.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you. Thank you, and we have our next Chair Iglesias.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I think the building is beautiful, and I also love any opportunity to expand affordable housing. But the but that follows that is the not surprising one. I'm sure that every single commissioner is going to kind of press upon this as well. For me, this isn't a question about the legality. I understand that you could offer zero. parking spots. My concern, and I think that where reality seems to not really involve this project, and I don't say that to be disrespectful, but it's if this project is meant to be family friendly, with half of the units being two or three bedroom, and yet there's the amount of units there are, excuse me, the amount of parking it is, it amounts to about a third from what would normally exist in a planning standpoint. So with two or three bedrooms, you'd normally have two spots, and with a studio, you might have a half a spot. And even with that conservative approach, that would still result in plus 67% more. So that's not even looking at visitors. The nearest grocery store that I understand is Knob Hill, which is over a half mile away. And so I feel like this is going to be putting a pretty large burden on folks, that it's meant to be an affordable living community, but no one's taking the Caltrain to get the groceries. So how do we reconcile that? Just mentally reconcile that.
Hi, I can speak a little bit to that. I just finished up a different project, obviously in San Mateo, where very similarly we had about 225 units and close to a similar parking ratio. And I think, you know, when it came to that, we're looking at things very holistically, of not necessarily just about parking, but all the, and really encouraging more of a multimodal strategy. So we're seeing here at 1171, we have a bike room for about 112 bikes. It was huge capacity. At our other properties, we're seeing those really start to fill up, especially with e-bikes as well, as we're seeing more and more of our residents lean into that rather than have a car. So I think looking at things such as bicycles, transit passes, at a lot of our properties, we're starting to introduce, we're piloting the Bay Pass, which is the unlimited Clipper card that's free, unlimited, all transit across the Bay. So giving those to our residents and seeing also car, you know, that affecting car ownership and usage. And then in addition to that, when we're working on a parking plan, we do our best to right size it. So in terms of making sure that our, you know, two and three bedrooms, you know, are getting priority for spots, and doing continuous management to acknowledge that sometimes people get a new car, take one away, and making sure that there is flexibility within that. So I think with all those various strategies together, we are looking very closely at this. You know, we aren't just ignoring it at all of our properties, especially on the peninsula, even ones that are close to Caltrain stations. But I think, yes, taking into account the different alternate modes of transit as well for our residents.
And I do appreciate that. And it's tough because desperately need the housing. And wouldn't want a need for parking to then result in less units. So it's not like it's an easy solution. There's not an obvious solution. It's also just this particular location is in effectively like mostly a business park. So it's not like we're placing this. It's not like this is downtown Sunnyvale, which would be just surrounded by amenities. And then the other part that I think is another concern is with that many units, they're bound to have like a regular flow of visitors. And that's where I really don't know, as I look on the map, I have no idea where that's going to flow to. So there will be no spaces at all reserved for visitors. So is the expectation that it would just be street parking, or I mean?
Yeah, currently just anticipating street parking, but I think that's definitely something that we can look into, especially at some of our properties and what the demand is there for visitor parking. I think about having a larger portfolio is, you know, we can really look at what is happening on the ground. And then, yes, in terms of just the area in general, and yes, it's not in downtown necessarily. I do think with the influx of all those new units, as you guys are probably expecting, I think by the time that we hope this project comes online, you know, we're not banking on change to happen, but I do think, you know, possibly seeing, you know, more growth in that area with the multiple new, you know, market rate affordable developments too that are in the area, and hopefully, you know, more amenities that come with that as well.
Okay, and yeah, my final comment first off, that very, very good and helpful insights and points, and the fact that you do have a large portfolio. What would be great is for us to also get to benefit to understand some of those insights, because this is a problem that we see frequently, and we're not really sure how to think about it. But, you know, acknowledging that it's how do you create a space that there are other modes, transportation, but also you're able to learn from now that you actually have real like case studies to use of this is how people have adjusted, and that would be really helpful to bring to us. So thank you so much.
Definitely. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The next, Commissioner Pine, please.
Thank you. So I wanted to talk about a different kind of parking, which is your bike parking. I was a little unclear. There's a table on sheet G1.0, and it says there's like two rows for total bike parking. And I see the numbers, and I'm glad there's more bike parking provided than required, but I will say that I kind of see where, like, I see the bike storage on the plan, but I think it would be helpful when this comes, but, and I kind of see the plan, but I think it would be helpful when this came back for a public hearing, if we could get like a more thorough bicycle and pedestrian circulation diagram also, so I could see how you deconflict that with the car circulation. So would that be something you could bring back for the public hearing?
Yes, we can incorporate that.
Okay, thank you. The other thing I just liked, I don't want to belabor the car parking thing too much. I just would also just like to flag that, as far as I can tell, that the Caltrain access is great. My concern is that this isn't super close to any bus route, and something that's just been a recurring huge issue that we see all of the time is when kids are getting to school, they're reliant on the VTA bus network, since the schools around here don't run their own buses. So it's just one of the things to keep in the back of one's mind, because if you're trying to get to, like, honestly, if I was trying to get from here to Fremont High, the best option would actually be to, I think, take the Caltrain one stop and connect to the 55 at the transit stop, except I have absolutely no idea if that transfer actually makes sense in real time, because VTA and Caltrain do an absolutely god-awful job of coordinating their schedules. So I'm just going to, I'm just going to throw up there that it is, I think, a factor that the bus, that this isn't super close to any of the bus lines, but I don't think you need to hear my complaints about VTA and Caltrain integration. So, but moving on to some of the other architectural aspects, I love that you're preserving as many street trees as possible. That's another thing that's done on, that was a thing on the other Sonora Curve project. It's great there, it's great here. I also honestly love that you're only asking for two waivers. Like, we get projects all the time that are asking for like 10, 15 waivers. You're only asking for two. I think both of them are reasonable. I think that's fine. It's honestly it's refreshing to see somebody using the state density bonus to actually increase density. So often we just hear, there's a state density bonus project. We're providing 85% of the dense of the provided density. And I'm just like, wow, that's great. You're really helping solve the housing crisis. And like, so overall, I think this is a good project. I think that we need the housing. We need the low moderate income housing. I'm honestly very happy to see this coming for the Planning Commission, and hope it comes back for public hearing sooner rather than later. So thank you.
Thank you. The next we have is Commissioner Davis, please.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Great presentation, both staff and the applicant. I too have a few questions. Do we know which school district this is in? Is it in Santa Clara Unified?
We can see if we could check that for you really quickly.
Okay. I'm just concerned, and this does tie back to parking, like everything else does. There are no schools within walking distance. Santa Clara High, I guess, is not too bad of a bike. I have no idea where elementary school kids would go. I kind of fear that they would be sent off to maybe, Ellis's Sunnyvale. I just see a development that's great because we have units that will accommodate families and so on, and they're going to have to use an automobile to get to school. And we don't see enough parking there. So that's kind of how that leads. I did have a question is, what is the zone density for this parcel? I guess that's for staff.
It's actually 54 dwelling units per acre.
Oh, excellent. Okay. So, and this is right about 100 dwelling units per acre. Great. Echoing what Commissioner Pine said, density bonus is being used properly. It is zoned for mixed use, but it's purely residential. I guess I got used to seeing dropping the commercial aspects as one of the, one of the concessions. That's not needed here to do that. This particular mixed use does not require commercial. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I'll ask the easy question first. So we have the concession about the storage units. I did some rough math in my head. Are these going to be configured in such a way that someone could put a bike in there?
So to clarify, you mean they can put a bike in the unit or in
in the storage units.
In storage units.
Yes.
I don't believe so. The storage themselves are more like a box, like 4x4x8 type of ratio proportion.
Okay, so they could put it up, I guess, right? I was just, when I look at the amount of bicycle parking spaces, bicycle parking and the car parking, and it's like, oh, yeah, we're gonna end up with bikes all over the place, which is not a terrible thing. Okay, and now I'm gonna get to the complicated one. I was looking at the roof heights, and this is not a complaint or anything, it's a pure question. So I see that the building code for 3A allows for 85 feet.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. Correct, yep.
And then our zoning allows for 100 feet. And you're proposing 76 feet. So you're using the density bonus. I'm just curious as to, I guess, where's the difference? Why doesn't the zoning match the building code? Is it that to get to 100 feet, we'd have to use a different building style?
Yeah, in a nutshell, that's really the case. When we go to anything higher than 75 feet to the last floor, mm-hmm. You essentially trigger a high-rise building. So it brings into a lot of different firefighting requirements and life safety requirements.
Okay, and my understanding is the cost for that at basically under 175 or 200 feet, it costs more per square foot than staying at 7 or 8 stories.
Right, the incremental benefit of that one extra floor doesn't outweigh the additional cost that it brings. At least that's how it's generally looked at.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess you can probably see where this is going. The zoning for 100 feet is for all practical purposes the same as zoning for like 80 feet because nothing's going to pencil out at 100 feet except for pink elephant projects. I'm curious as to the 76 feet, though, when you could have gone up to 85, did you come up with the plans and they came up to 76, or was there an effort to keep it a little bit lower for costs, or?
I think it goes back to what you mentioned earlier about the construction type mm-hmm. 3. It does limit us to 85 feet, right? So if our current height, and also 5 stories actually, in our current height, it's 5 stories of housing over 2 stories of the concrete podium. So to get that additional 8 or 9 feet that we want to claim,
yeah,
essentially it's an extra story, then actually triggers a different construction type,
okay,
which again, you know, creates a really different way of looking at how this can come in at the cost.
Okay, yeah. great answer. Yeah. Okay, I do like the project. I think all the waivers and concessions are appropriate. We have the objective design standards, but you found ways to kind of comply with the spirit of them, so I'm all good. Yeah, we're in a housing crisis, but I hope to see you again very shortly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Figoni, please.
Hello. I just had a couple of questions on the, back to the parking, especially on the handicap parking. How many total stalls are there? Because I count 6, but maybe I'm wrong. Is there 6 or 7 total between the 2 floors?
I'll have to double check, but whatever we propose will meet the state code requirements.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's 88 spaces.
When I look at the parking, it seems like it's majority EV spots. Is that by design, or is that just you're plumbing it that way, you're having all the electrical there, or is every one of those spots going to be an EV spot?
It's actually interesting because we're currently in the end of a code cycle. So by the time this project goes into building permit application date, it'll be the new green building code that comes in effect next year. And they actually have quite a bit of EV requirements, both day one EV receptacles and future EV. So I think it's really a function of responding to state requirements for EV.
Okay. So for those with disabled placards, it's illegal to park in an EV spot if you're not charging your vehicle. There's actually a California code against that. So with the limited parking, I noticed that there's on the second floor maybe, I think I see 3 spots that don't have EV. You know. So I'm assuming those are for gas cars?
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point, you know, as far as how folks who don't have EV cars can use those stalls. And in the building code, they actually have a specific carve out for a publicly funded project such as this one, where, you know, if it's assigned parking, which colleagues at MidPen just mentioned, the code does allow for folks to park in an EV stall if it's a managed parking situation. So even if you don't have an EV car, you can park in a stall that's assigned for EV.
So you can, even though there's a vehicle code against that. Is it because it's private property?
I don't know the nexus for that, but I just know from a design professional standpoint, the state code does have that carve out for publicly funded projects.
Okay.
Yeah,
I just want to make sure because CVC code 225507.8 says you cannot. I didn't even know that myself until I looked it up.
Yeah.
So you're not allowed, even if you're in a handicapped spot, if you have a handicapped placard or card, but you're not charging in that spot, you get a ticket.
So I wonder if it's...
With the limited handicap parking, are those spots assigned, are the handicapped spots part of the lottery too, or are those first come, first serve? Because if someone's disabled and they sign up for the apartment complex but they can't get a parking spot in the disabled parking, they're kind of, you know, it's tough.
Right.
Because they can't walk very far. So how does that work in that lottery system that you were describing above?
I'll have to defer to Kevin on that, yeah.
Yeah, and I do not know the precise details, but we would obviously give priority to somebody who had a placard and had a need for an ADA space to get that space.
Okay.
Yeah, and if that need were to arise after occupancy, we would facilitate some kind of trade or do whatever we could to accommodate them.
And I know it's kind of a fringe question. I apologize. Mm. It's just,
that's okay.
I'm just trying to think long term because there are limited spots. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you get injured and you need to park there for 6 months.
Right.
And so how would that work with the space being so limited? You know, somebody breaks their leg, they break their ankle or something, and they need to be parking closer or something, and they can't get those spots, and maybe they can't get to work or, you know, because now they can't, stuff like that. So I was just thinking about that, you know, a little bit long term. But and there is one other question I had. There is, I'm just being a little nitpicky, I'm sorry. There is one parking spot that you have designated for disabled. I think it's on the second floor. You have it between the trash and the laundry. It's actually the worst spot because if you're trying to back out, you can't get out. You got a wall on one side, and then you've got the trash area and the laundry. I would suggest maybe you guys look at that, maybe move that spot, because if you're in a van, in a handicap van, and you're trying to back out, it's tough. And usually you need to be in areas where people can move out, in and out. There's really not much access there for the wheelchair. On the driver's side, it's up against the wall. So, yeah, there's only a 24-foot, it says on the map, a 24-foot space, which is shorter than it looks like everything else, plus you're up against a wall. So I would maybe encourage, if it's possible, if you guys could move that to another more friendlier spot. Disabled people would appreciate that a lot, because some of us have a hard time. If you got a big van, you're trying to move it, it's very tight.
I appreciate the feedback on practicality
it's on
of it.
It's hard to say. It's next to unit 3A, unit 2A, and it's between the trash and the laundry area. So.
Yeah, we will definitely take a look at that. Thank you.
Yeah, I just have concerns about the parking for that, but I it sounds like you're on top of it. You try to manage it the best you can. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have the Commissioner Segura, please.
Thank you, Vice Chair. So it's a great project. I have like two quick questions and maybe comment. So you spoke about the height of the building, and obviously if you're going higher than that, a different type of construction. The question, did you guys, and I know that budget has to do a lot of it, but did you guys consider going one story down for parking?
The answer is yes, through our work on 78 Sonora Court, where we found out the groundwater is quite high. The design groundwater is about 4 feet below grade. That's so essentially, if we did any digging, it would have to be a lot of dewatering that's going to happen. And we actually came across that on the Astra project on the other side of tracks.
Okay, yeah. Make perfect sense. Yeah. Thank you. The next thing that I would like to kind of maybe highlight or when we're talking about parking for bikes, as it was very well mentioned by your team over there, that you're going to have e-bikes. I just want to make sure that you guys, when you're planning it, making sure that people can also charge their bikes, because otherwise they'll have to take it home, take it in the elevators, and charge them. So please make sure that you guys, when you're running this project, which is a great project, to make sure to allow some charging stations over there. My next comment is for staff. I know that you guys are responsible for obviously planning and not the building, but there is any way to convey maybe to the building team about something like that, that when we go to large projects to make sure that there are places for charging, for charging stations for e-bikes and things of that nature?
We can pass that on to the building division. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, that is my fellow commissioners asked a lot of good questions, so that's wonderful. I have a couple of questions, and they are more in terms of building. I do like your presentation, and I love the way you have used the stucco to differentiate the building parts and created like a little bit high-end building project. So that is a good thing. So on the, now I'm going in little details, because on the level 7, there is a manager's unit on the corner, and then there is a balcony there. So I was just wondering that on every floor, is there a way that they can share that balcony on the 7th floor So because then the residents on that, like every floor, I mean, every floor doesn't have, like third floor has, you know, they can go to garden, second floor and third floor. But what happens, like when you go above, there are no common places like entertainment. So I saw this seventh floor that in the corner of Northeast, it's on the street corner, there is a manager's unit. And there is a door which goes to balcony. And I was wondering that, is that possible to use that? It's a large space. Can have it for the residents on that floor. So that's the one. Second one, I wanted to also say that like every time from 3 to 7 floor, when people go into elevator and come out, is there a way that you can architecturally make that little bit different every floor, like somehow not necessarily they are going to do interior treatment, so maybe somehow so people can say that it's 4th or 5th or 6th or 7th floor, so somehow maybe you can do, they don't need to up, not like with colors but more architectural features, so it's permanent there because it's a low income house project. So and so that's the second one, and the third one is on the north, so when you come out of elevator on the lobby, on the north, on every floor, north, south, east, west, northwest corner, there is a, I don't know, is there a glass there? What are you going to put there? And is there a way that you can carve out space, a chair or something? It's on the end of the lobby and it's a dead space. So that's like people can go and sit there, like one person can sit and look out. And then I know I'm just like looking at the details because we want to make them better spaces. And these are little details, but it does make large impact for the people who are living there. Because I've visited so many people in those kind of income group, and where I face the problem. That's why I'm saying. Also, there is, I mean, this is just nitpicking, but the unit on the unit 3A from the courtyard all the way from third to seventh floor, you have provided windows on one direction, which is like south. The sun will come east. The sun, it will rise the sun and it will go away. That unit will be very dark because the kitchen, but the sun will go away and that's in the courtyard, but the lights will be only in the bedroom. So just look into and providing window on the other side, so both walls. So those are like just little details to make the space a little better. Okay, so these are just my comments. But other than that, I appreciate your project and we want more housing, so this is perfect. So. Last thing that you have used tiles for, like you have used tiles only below the windows. So I was wondering that what was the purpose of, tiles are expensive. So are you going to use it for the whole, the first floor? I mean, how you have thought about using tiles?
For the tiles on the outside, we are focusing on the ground floor because to your point, those are expensive materials, so we want to use it strategically. And for us, I think it helps enhance the pedestrian experience. So that was a choice we made on the ground floor, but in that limited way, where it's facing the street. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So that's, anybody else has any question? Oh, there's one more question we have. Oh, okay, so now, okay. So we, I think our questions from commissioners are done. Let me now just, okay. So I'll go ahead and open the public comment on the specific, on this item. Please submit a speaker card to the recording officer, raise your digital hand now, or dial *9 on a telephone to indicate you wish to speak. I will call on members of the public participating in person first, followed by remote participants. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. We don't have in-person speaker. So does anybody else want to speak on this item? Remote speakers are warned to limit their comments to the agenda item being considered. Speakers who are ruled out of order will not be given another chance to speak on this item. This title of this agenda item is A special development permit, demolition of existing industrial building and the construction of 172 seven-story apartment units. Recording officer, do we have any remote participants wishing to speak on this item?
Yes, we do. I'll allow Stephen Meyer the floor to speak now.
Hello, good evening. Thank you for your service, all public planning commissioners. Thank you so much for the effort you put in. And I'd like to quote the chair, this is the perfect project. It's density near transit. And the more density we get, the more that we can create demand for retail opportunities. And I do appreciate the concerns on the transportation for school students. Commissioner Pine brought that up, and I do agree with that. But we should shoot ahead of the puck and get going. And I celebrate this project. I think it's wonderful. In my life, my daughter is just moving back to San Francisco Bay and looking for housing. So it's personal to me, and I'm sure it's personal to everyone who has a child who's going to graduate from high school and go off and do something. And then they're going to come back here and need to live somewhere. So even if you don't have a child, you should just respect the need for housing. So I really don't appreciate any complaints about parking. We need to lead by celebrating this project, absolutely. If there's no parking, then people can buy commercial parking. We need to create demand for large commercial parking structures. The only way to do that is not to put the burden on the cost of housing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have no further hands raised.
So I will close the public comments. And at this time, the meeting will adjourn the meetings at 7:07 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Let's call to order the Planning Commission meeting of July 28th at 7:07 p.m. The city does not tolerate disruptive behavior in our meetings. Sunnyvale prides itself on the rich diversity of our residents. We are committed to creating a culture of belonging where members of our diverse community feel included, safe, and respected. This Planning Commission meeting is considered a limited public forum, which means the Commission can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech. Speaker comments must be limited to the agenda item being considered by the Commission for consent calendar or public hearing items. Speaker comments during oral communications must be limited to matters within the Commission's authority, generally referred to as within the Commission's subject matter jurisdiction. If a speaker's comments are not related to an agenda item, the presiding officer will rule the speaker out of order. The speaker will not be ruled out of order because of a disagreement with the content of their speech. Location and online meeting details are available on the Planning Commission agenda. Use the Show Captions button to view captions on Zoom. Comments on matters not on the agenda must be submitted prior to the time I call the item for oral communications. Comments on the agenda item must be considered prior to the time I close the public hearing on the agenda item. Speakers are requested to keep their comments to the time period set for public comments for the agenda item, which will be strictly enforced. Guidelines are posted on the city's website and on the Planning Commission meeting agenda. Please join me in a salute to the flag. Recording officer, may we please have the roll call?
Commissioner Pine.
Present.
Chair Iglesias.
Present.
Commissioner Fagoni.
Present.
Vice Chair Shukla.
Present.
Commissioner Davis.
Present.
Commissioner Segura.
Present.
Commissioner Cerrone.
Present.
We have 7 commissioners present.
Thank you. All right, we are now at oral communications. This is the public's opportunity to address the commission on topics not listed on tonight's agenda. This section is limited to 15 minutes and may be extended or continued after the public general hearings business section of the meetings. Individuals may only speak once during oral communications. This Planning Commission meeting is a limited public forum, and the Commission can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech. Speaker comments during oral communications must be limited to matters within the Commission's authority. Again, that's the Commission's subject matter jurisdiction. If a speaker's comments are outside the Commission's subject matter jurisdiction, the presiding officer will rule the speaker out of order. This allows the Commission to conduct its business in a reasonably efficient manner and protects the rights of other speakers. A speaker will not be ruled out of order because of a disagreement with the content of their speech. Please submit a speaker card to the recording officer, raise your digital hand now, or dial *9 on the telephone to indicate you wish to speak, and I will call on members of the public participating in person first, followed by remote participants. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. Given that there's no one here, we'll go to remote speakers. Because of the nature of remote communication, speakers who are ruled out of order will not be given another chance to speak. Therefore, speakers are warned to limit their comments to subjects that fall in within this commission's authority to decide or take action. Recording officer, do we have any remote participants wishing to speak on oral communications?
We do not, Chair.
All right, thank you. I will go ahead and close oral communications. This brings us to the consent calendar. I will go ahead and open public comment on consent calendar items. Please submit a speaker card to the recording officer, raise your digital hand now, or dial *9 on the telephone to indicate you wish to speak. I will call members of the public participating in person first, followed by remote participants. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. Does anyone want to speak, given that we have no one here? Again, recording officer, do we have any remote participants wishing to speak on this item?
We do not.
Thank you. I will close public comment. I will now ask for a motion from my colleagues. Commissioner Pine.
Yeah, I move the consent calendar submitted.
Thank you. And Commissioner Davis.
I second the motion.
Thank you. Recording officer, please conduct a vote.
The motion passes with 6 yeses and Commissioner Cerrone abstaining.
Thank you. All right, well, we have no public hearing or general business items. So this brings us to non-agenda items. Planning commissioners, now's your time to raise your hand. If you have any comments, we'll start with Commissioner Pine.
Thank you, Chair. Just wanted to flag to everybody that I will be in Olympic National Park at the time of our next scheduled meeting and therefore will not be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Pine. Next, we have Commissioner Davis.
Just flagging that I'm in a similar situation, that I will be returning to the United States on that date, so will not be in attendance on August 3rd. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Davis. And Commissioner Segura.
Same thing, I will not be here, so I'll be out of the States.
Okay, well, we still have a majority. Are there any other commissioners who will not be able to be in attendance for the next? Okay, well, no one gets sick, everyone get plenty of sleep and take your vitamins. Any other commissioners wishing to speak? All right, seeing no new hands, we'll move to staff. Planning officer, do you have any comments?
No comments for the commission tonight.
Fantastic. Well, then that brings us to adjournment. It's my pleasure to adjourn us at 7:13 p.m. Thank you, everyone.